It's time for Big Blue Kickoff Live. Only on Giants.com.
Smith back to throw. Has time over the middle. Intercepted by Roll again. Antrell to the 20. Needs a block. Pinball down to the 5. Roll call time. Antrell with back-to-back picks.
Manning back to throw. Steps up. Deep ball down the middle of the field.
He's got Cruz. 35, 30, 20, 10, 5. Touchdown, Giants.
Romo drops straight back to throw. Steps up. Gets hit by Canty.
Pass intercepted by Jason Pierre-Paul. To the 10, to the 5. Touchdown, Giants.
There goes Wilson again. Trying to break to the outside. Wilson cuts it back to his right. Needs a block, and Wilson's going to go. He's to the 10, 5. Touchdown, Giants. 97 yards.
Now here are your hosts, John Schmelk and Paul Dottino.
Welcome back to Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. 201-939-4513. Hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. Good morning, everybody. The Giants get a day off at practice, but while the players might be relaxing at home, we are not. John Schmelk here with you, joined by Paul Dottino, who finally decided to grace us with his presence. As usual, very tardy, trying to get here on time for the show.
You know,
thanks
I
for
really,
joining us, Paul.
John, I sympathize for everybody who is fighting this traffic here on Route 3 West. If you're coming in listening on your phone app, you know that Route 3 West by the Meadowlands has been shut down. I have no idea why. There are cop cars all over the place. Of course, John thinks they were coming after me.
Luckily, Paul has slipped into the Quest Diagnostics Training Center, and he has avoided the authorities.
Yes, I have. You know, I know some back roads around this place. Thank goodness I've been around forever. And so I've been able to make it, and I'm glad to be here. Crushed that there is an off day today. You know, and I'm sure Tom Coughlin is too, John. He was just saying the other day, hey, we only got a few practices left.
Now we're down to 8, I believe.
And it's truly amazing how quickly it goes by, especially when you don't have to make those trips back and forth upstate. But in any event, it is a beautiful day for football, and we have no practice.
No question about it, but the players will get a day off. They'll have their carded practice tomorrow in preparation for the game on Sunday against the Indianapolis Colts. That is a primetime national game. It'll be on Fox 5, so if you're in the New York area, Fox National, obviously, if you're not in New York. Which is good news for Time Warner customers, so they don't have to worry about this game getting blocked out.
And you know, John, it's interesting. It's a Sunday night primetime game, unlike in the regular season when it's an NBC game. Folks, please understand, this game is on Fox 5. And, you know, I know it gets confusing, but it is a Sunday night 7 o'clock New York time kickoff on Fox 5.
Now, I'm guessing that Joe Buck's probably not going to be doing the game because he'll probably have a baseball game that day for the Fox package, is my guess. So you'll probably get
Brenneman,
Kenny
maybe,
Albert,
or Kenny.
Kenny and Troy maybe
who,
doing
yeah,
the game.
I don't know. I haven't even bothered to look at that. I just know we're going to be working.
No doubt about it.
Radio-wise.
And you will have Bob Papa, Carl Banks, and Howard Cross on the radio. And it'll be the A crew, and we'll have a good time. So make sure you check that out. Coverage is on WCBS 101.1 FM at 6:05, kickoff at 7:05. And then Bob Pop and I will be in the locker room after the game. Lance Menno and Jeff Fiegel's pre and post with Paul Dottino putting his 2 cents in when we let him on the air as well. It should be a lot of fun.
I'm looking forward to it, John.
All right, 201-939-4513, and we'll get to your phone calls in just a second. We'll start racking them up, and you can go to Twitter and send in your questions and comments to hashtag Giants Chat as well. And the big news the last few days has been the return of Terrell Thomas. Terrell seemed to think in the spring he will be ready for the first week of camp. That didn't happen. Now we find out that was more because of a hamstring maybe than it was perhaps because of the knee. And since he's been back, Paul, Terrell Thomas has looked pretty good in practice. He has not played safety. He has played corner. He's done a lot of work one-on-one with Victor Cruz in those drills, and he's played some team now, some 7-on-7. And I think he's looked better than both of us expected him to look.
Well, I think he's looked a lot better than a lot of people expected him
to course.
Look. But the bottom line is the Giants are going to have to make a decision in the next 3 weeks as to whether or not Terrell Thomas is on their 53. He cannot go to the PUP list, the PUP list, because he has practiced during training camp. So that eliminates that option from the equation. The only things they can do with Terrell Thomas are keep him on the 53, put him on the IR list, put him on the temporary IR list, or flat out cut him. I mean, those are the only options right now. There's always the waived injury settlement thing if he winds up getting re-injured and they're forced to get rid of him. But there are not a whole lot of options here. I mean, Terrell Thomas either proves to the Giants that he can play and he stays on the team for sure if he does, or he doesn't. I mean, it's just that simple.
And he'll have, hopefully, one preseason game to make that happen. And I think that's another fair question. Do the Giants use Terrell Thomas in a preseason game, considering his injury history, but he hasn't played in a game in 2 years? Or do you hold him out for the regular season, try to keep him healthy, and use him then? To me, considering he's gone 2 years without playing in an NFL football game, you want him to get his feet wet before the regular season gets here so he's a little bit more comfortable week one against Dallas. Because, frankly, let's be honest. Do you want Terrell Thomas stepping out there covering Miles Austin one-on-one in the slot when he hasn't played in a game in 2 years for the first time? I certainly don't.
No, I think, John, to be perfectly frank with you, if he makes the 53, I think he's probably no more than the dime back at the beginning of the season. I think Aaron Ross is the nickel.
And he would have to jump Hosley in that pecking order, too.
Right. And so, again, no more than the dime back
right
at the beginning of the season. And then I think they'll buy time with him. He'll be probably one of the healthy scratches, the inactive guys on Sunday for the first few weeks of the season as they continue to buy time with him in practice and then work him into the lineup slowly. And I really believe that's probably the best prescription for him. But I agree with you. You're going to have to get him on the field under game conditions before the regular season starts to put him on the 53. Otherwise, how can you take that chance? You can't put an unknown on your 53.
And there are other corners in camp that have played particularly well and over a longer period of time than Terrell Thomas. Charles James, the undrafted free agent, has shown the team a lot, not only on defense but also on special teams, which is a role you need your fifth, sixth defensive backs to play. You have a guy like Tremaine McBride, who's a six-year pro. He's done an excellent job here working with Sam Madison, getting his technique better. He's been a revelation in camp. So there is some stiff competition that Terrell Thomas is going to have to battle with.
Even Myrtle has done a few good things right as well. The Giants, again, I hate to say this, it's like the third year in a row. They're loaded at corner, and the last 2 years, more than half of those guys went down with injuries, and the Giants wound up being short at corner. So you can never have enough. I will say this, though, John. In looking at Terrell Thomas, he had told us, first of all, that it was not the knee that prevented him from practicing the first couple of weeks at camp. It was a sore hamstring when he came in during the conditioning drills.
Which he hurt in conditioning, correct.
Right. So that in itself is a good sign, that it was not the knee that held him out. Remember, a lot of us thought maybe it could have been because the Giants weren't telling us why he was being held out. That was good news. Subsequent to that, he's running well, he's turning well, he's exploding well, he's covering Victor Cruz out of the slot a lot of times in practice the last few days.
Which means a lot of cutting, obviously.
And that's a good test, for sure. So I think all systems are green, thumbs up, looking good, coming back from a third ACL. And again, folks, we've told you 1,000 times, Thomas Davis of the Carolina Panthers is the only player in NFL history who has come back from 3 ACL surgeries. He did it last season. It was considered a miracle, and Terrell Thomas is trying to repeat that. I'll say this, John. I don't think he plays this weekend against the Colts.
I agree.
I think he may get some snaps against the Jets.
I agree.
And I say if he passes the test against the Jets, he probably will get a few snaps against New England as well before going into that game against Dallas. Again, my feeling is he'll make it. He'll get on the roster. And he'll probably be inactive the first couple of weeks.
And one other thing to note, too, is that the way they performed Terrell Thomas's ACL surgery this year was different than the way they did it last year. There are two ways you can repair a torn ACL. You can take a ligament from a cadaver and replace the torn ACL. That's what he did last year. And it didn't hold, obviously. It re-snapped. And generally speaking, from a medical perspective, and Terrell Thomas talked about this to us in the offseason, it's considered an easier or a more structurally sound ACL if you take it and you form it from a tendon that's already in your leg. And that's something Terrell Thomas didn't want to do last year because obviously you're taking a tendon out of your own leg. Who wants to do that? I can't blame the guy. So this year, that's what they did. They used their own tendon from a different part of his leg to replace the ACL. And so far, so good. It seems that's holding together a little bit better.
I'm so glad I didn't have breakfast. I don't like talking about surgeries.
I mean, you talk about how you're spending time in the swamps. You must be around cadavers all the time.
This is not good.
201-939-4513. We got a bunch of people on hold. We'll get to you in just a second. Let's go to our phone to say hello to Andrew in Stanhope, New Jersey. Andrew, what's going on?
Hey, guys. I heard Paul Zatino was late for the Pittsburgh broadcast, and the interns found him in the tanning booth.
That's a good line.
So
Paul's, hey, time out here. This is all natural paisan you're looking at, pal.
Yes, me too. My mom's Italian, and my wife is from Thailand, so we got the best food in the world.
Actually, that sounds like a pretty good combination right there.
Yeah. And my question was about the linebacker, is Dan Connor, if you think he's going to start. And because he was the three that I like best are Connor, Rivers, and Jaquan Williams. And because Dan Connor was on the Cowboys, is there any advantage that he knows the play calling? Because I always thought like when Bill Belichick signed Tebow, it was basically just to force the Jets to have to change their verbiage, you know, just to stick it to him because he doesn't like the Jets.
Time out. Before you go any further, you know the Cowboys have changed their coordinators.
Yeah, so basically, you know, Connor, he probably wouldn't know a whole lot about the offensive playbook anyway, and even though Callahan's calling the plays rather than Garrett, their offense system is probably the same. But on defense, with Monty Kiffin and Rob Marinelli, where Connor would really be able to give the most insight to the Cowboys, it's a completely different system. So that's really not going to be much of a factor.
Now, as far as him winning the job, there's no question that Mark Krzyzewski had a very good offseason, terrific OTAs, very strong in minicamp, came here to training camp, looked like he was going to continue that ascension, but then had a poor game against the Steelers, and Dan Connor clearly outplayed him to the point where this week Dan Connor has been taking some of those first-team reps away from Mark Krzyzewski, which he had not gotten the first 2.5 weeks of camp. John, that is a surefire sign that Connor has at least evened up the competition, if not even grabbed a slight advantage going into week number two of the preseason.
And you got anything else?
No, that's good because I think he's a smart veteran, Connor, and I'm high on the linebackers. I'm just worried about the first game, the first few games. They've never played together as a unit, but I'm high on Connor. He's smart, so we'll see. We'll see.
Thanks so much for the call. You know what's funny, John? I get callers on the show sometimes when we're doing it here, and then other times I get the comments on Twitter. People have been really getting on me for the way that I've had to flop on Mark Krzyzewski. But, you know, sometimes, folks, that's the way it turns out with a player. You know, you see him as a rookie. He's got some flashes. It looks like he's going to earn his way onto the team. There's certainly some talent there. There's some ability there. You think it's going to go up, 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 and up, and you look at it, you project, you predict, you see what you see, and then, well, guess what? Last year, in his cameos, he didn't do very well. In fact, he did rather poorly. And so now you have to take the guy down a grade. And it's like, okay, now he's not such a good prospect anymore. Now he didn't play so well anymore. You know, in athletics, it's a game of what have you done for me lately? And we can only tell people what we see lately, what the guy looks like now. And if there is any possible projection or at least some kind of trend as to where he's going. And Herzlich has truly had a roller coaster trend over the first 3 years of his tenure with the Giants. And right now that trend appears to be going down.
Let's go to Owen in Toronto. Owen, good morning.
Hi.
What's going on, Owen? What's
I'm
on your mind?
On. I know. I just wanted to say first before I didn't realize I was on, but haven't been on in a couple of weeks, been busy. But it's nice to be back on the show, and I think you're doing great.
Hey, appreciate it. Thanks for calling in, Owen. What's up?
Yeah, now to my questions. I don't know what the talk is about today, so I'm just going to say, I'm just going to ask you some questions. First off, since I've been very busy, I heard about Victor Cruz's contract. I think it's 6 years, $45 million, if I'm correct. I just want to know what you think, because I haven't heard much of what people are saying. I love the contract. I think it's a fair amount of money. I also don't think they overpaid him too much, and I think that I would have liked a couple more years, but I think that 6 years is fine. I just want to know what you think about that.
Yeah, and you're rarely in the NFL going to get a contract longer than 6 years. For a wide receiver especially, that's about as long as you're going to get. I think it was a fair contract for both sides. I think, quite frankly, because he was a restricted free agent, the Giants probably got a little bit better of the deal. On the open market, Cruz probably would have gotten this year if he had a great year, upwards around 10 a year. So I think the Giants signed a really good contract. But at the same time, Victor Cruz guaranteed himself $15 million. It's life-changing money for him. So I think everybody walks out of that negotiation a winner.
Okay, yeah, I agree with you. I thought it was a good contract, too. Now, my other question. I think the offense this season is going to be off the charts. I think it's going to be great. But here's my question. Last year they started off 6-2, and then the rest of the season I'm pretty sure they went 3-5 or something like that. They started off well, ended up not so strong. Now, I know the offense was also almost as good last season. Why is it that this season it's going to be like people are saying it, great offense, all this stuff? Is it because like why are people saying it's going to be so much better than last season? Because of Ruben Randle, it's progressing. Like I don't know. Like I know David Wilson should be better. I know Ruben Randle should be better. But I and I'm expecting a great offense this season too. But I don't know why everybody thinks all of a sudden.
Look, let's
like
make it
so
simple. Yeah, Ruben Randle's one reason. They think they're going to see more production out of the tight end in Brandon Myers, who caught 79 balls for the Raiders.
You're forgetting the biggest reason.
People are thinking that David Wilson is a real explosive
running
back.
That's not the biggest reason either.
That Ahmad Bradshaw's not.
Keep going.
People think that Akeem Nicks, is going to be Akeem Nicks again.
There you go. That's the
answer.
I mean,
there's a whole bunch of them. There's an expectation that the offensive line is going to play better than it did last year. You put all these things together. You add Lewis Murphy to the mix, a real deep threat speed burner who they haven't had since Mario Manningham. I mean, come on. I can give you six reasons I just sneezed out right there that give you optimism that this offense will be better than it was last year.
And Owen, I think the big one is Akeem Nicks. If you get him back, he's healthy, and he's Akeem Nicks, it changes the entire dynamic of this offense. It really does.
Yeah, you're right. Like, I first of all, I forgot about Myers. He's a huge addition. I totally forgot about that. That slipped my mind completely when I asked that. And also, Nicks, if he's healthy, he's a great player. But he hasn't, like, I don't remember the last time he was played 15 or 16 games. But
he's never
like,
played 16.
I know we have great. What?
He's never played 16.
Oh, he's never played. Oh, so I think one season he played 15. Am I wrong? He played 15 one season?
Yeah, I believe he had 15 one year, 12 another, 13 another, something like that.
Yeah, so hopefully if he can play 15 or 16 games and with Brandon Myers and all those additions, we should have a good offense. We've always had a good offense, but it should be even better now. And my last question. Okay. What do you think's going to happen? Like, how do you think, like, Eli, like, last year Eli, he had a good season, but his arm strength and all that stuff, you started hearing about at the end of the season. How do you think he's going to be this year?
Eli?
Because, no, I remember at the end of the season – like people were saying, like,
I got to be honest with you, John, and the caller's really throwing me for a loop with some of these questions because he's asking stuff that just seems to be so obvious. Eli Manning's in his prime.
Thanks for the call, and we appreciate it. But he did have an off year last year. He did.
Well,
he had an off year last year.
He was sporadic in spots, but
he had a completion percentage under 60%. That's bad for a top-notch NFL quarterback.
And he had a lack of depth at receiver.
Fair.
He had a guy who was out there at 75%, 70%. Nicks was 70, maybe.
Is
that fair? 70%.
Yeah, sure. I'll buy that.
I'm not putting that as much on Eli, as much as I am a function of what was around him. I mean, look, a quarterback's numbers are only going to be as good as the guys that he's getting it to. I mean, that's a big part of this thing.
No, let's see how Tom Brady does this year then.
I think every quarterback is going to suffer some statistical hurts or bumps and bruises when his receiving core is not what it's supposed to be.
In fairness, do you think Eli Manning was as good last year despite the stuff around him than he was 2 or 3 years ago?
No.
I don't.
Again, I think there were spots where he was sporadic and perhaps you could even call a little bit of a slump. But to say that as a whole – As a season, he had a bad season?
Oh, bad. No, bad's the wrong word. But was it below Eli Manning's standards? I think it was.
It wasn't his best NFL season. No question about that. But I don't think it was so far below his standards that I would be concerned.
No, I'm not concerned either.
In fact, quite frankly, he got the team to 9-7 without his most dangerous weapons being at their best.
And his defense not giving a whole lot, too.
And I know it doesn't mean a whole hill of beans, but he did do enough to be in the Pro Bowl. And again, I know there's a lot of reputation that goes into that at the same time, but I think there was a lot of respect around the league that Eli Manning is in his prime and should be for at least another 4 or 5 years.
Let's go to Joe down in Washington, D.C. Joe, what's going on, pal?
Hey, guys. I'm happy you guys are talking about Eli Manning because I have a question about that.
Sure.
Looking at this offense and looking just on paper, we don't know what it's going to be like during the regular season, whether they're going to struggle or they're going to be great. But just looking at it right now, from an August, you know, training camp preseason perspective, does this offense that Eli Manning has around him, is this the best offense he's had around him in his career? I mean, I personally, I think it is, just looking at it on paper. But overall, when I look at his career. I mean, he had a great running back in Peaky Barber, and he had his receivers in Toomer and Nick, Burris, and he had Shockey, and then he had Boss. But I think as a whole, when it comes to athleticism, youth, talent, I think this is the best offense Eli has around him.
I'm going to go further.
MVP here.
I'm going to go further than that. Potentially, this offense could be deeper, more explosive, more of an all-around threat than any Giants offense since Y.A. Tittle was operating back in the early 60s.
I don't necessarily disagree with you, Paul, but I'm going to make a counter-argument, and here's my counter-argument. I'm going to take us back to 2008. All right? You had Bradshaw and Jacobs at their best in their prime, okay? You had an offensive line in 2008 that might have been the best in football. Much better than I think the group you have there now.
Fair.
You had Burris at wide receiver. You had Steve Smith, who was very good at that time. And then their third receiver that year, Toomer was still there, right, in 2008?
Hickson was there, too.
Yeah.
Yes, and Toomer was still there in 2008 with Dominic Hickson.
Yes.
That
he
very
was on
good
the way
wide
down.
Receiver.
He was,
sure. I think that's the only, from what I've seen from the Giants watching them since the early 80s, that's your best argument as to the offense that would be just as good. And the biggest part of that argument, I think skill position-wise, this group is better. But the question to me is whether or not the offensive line from 2008, since it was so dominant, and it was dominant. The Giants were the best running team in the league that year. Does that overcome maybe the skill position guys not being quite as good?
And that's a very fair statement to make, but I think the question that we're addressing is a little bit different than that.
Explain.
When you're talking about the most complete offense, I totally agree with you. But more potentially explosive.
Okay, fair. That's fair.
I'll
buy that.
This offense has more big play threats, I think.
I agree. I'm with you on that.
I mean, I think that when you just look at their offense as a whole, I mean, they have it looks scary, and it looks like teams are going to be – there's going to be a lot of times where teams are going to be like, who's that, who's this, who's got Knicks, who's got Cruz. I think it has potential to be a very, very good offense, and I think that, Eli Manning, if everyone around him is healthy, and like you said, the offensive line can protect him, I think he can have an MVP year. So,
well, again, that word potential can get very scary. As many coaches will tell you, it's the most dangerous word in the dictionary, and quite honestly – as John and I have talked about many times, caller, we're going to let you go. As we've said many
times, John,
the bottom line is not only does that offensive line have to play well enough to allow those skill position guys to do what they do, but quite frankly, the skill position guys, specifically the running backs, have to make sure they do everything that they're supposed to do so that David Wilson, can stay on the field, to do what he needs to do.
No question about it. 201-939-4513. Wayne is in Newark, New Jersey. Wayne, good morning.
Hey, how you doing?
What's up, Wayne?
Hey, listen, I'm going to switch to the other side of the ball. I'm looking at our defense, and I'm liking the concentration and thinking football, so not jumping offside, low penalties, swarming the ball. That's what's going to get us back to the Super Bowl here at home this year. What you think?
Well, I mean, it's going to take all three units now. Come on, every coach will tell you that. It's not just about the defense or about the offense. It's also about special teams. I mean, right now, do you know who the Giants' kick returners are going to be? You really don't.
Well, I'm looking at Jerrigan myself. I like Jerrigan. I like Hosley. I like the way they doing it. And from prior years, from the last 3 years, this defensive squad looked like that dog that Tuckin was talking about that. And rolling them, that dog.
Here's the thing. I'm going to make it really simple for you. We're going to break up the team into three spots: the offense, defense, and specials. And what I'm going to tell you is this: you can very rarely have one of the three units play below average and get as far as you want to go. Okay? Very rarely. If you can have one unit play average and two above average, you've got a chance. But if you've got one of those three units playing below average, it's really hard to overcome.
And now here's the thing. I think this is why then Wayne's original point was right. The focus this year has to be on the defense. Last year the offense was above average. Was it great? No, but it was above average.
Yes.
The special teams were fine.
Average.
David Wilson, a good kickoff returner. He was dynamic. Lawrence Tynes was great kicking field goals. Weatherford was a very good punter.
Was it happened with the returns or the coverage units?
Coverage is okay. I would still say average to above average. That's fine.
Okay.
But the defense But the defense was way below average, and that's where you got to get better.
Yeah.
And I think for the defense to get better, and that goes to his original point, you have to get after the quarterback better, and you have to stop the run, which means you have to be more physical and aggressive up front with your defense. And I think that's where, if the Giants are going to get better this year, it's got to happen there.
Hanks and Moore, I think they're going to be a real good addition to the team. It's only the first preseason game, I know, but the drive that those rookies have, that's what we need. That's that dog. Get after that quarterback.
All right, Max.
Thanks for the call, Wayne. We appreciate it.
John, I agree. No question. The defense has the most to improve off of last season. I mean, I'd be foolish not to say that. But I'm still watching these special team units right now, and I'm saying to myself, okay, they really don't want David Wilson returning kickoffs. They still have no idea who their punt returner is going to be. The coverage units were real good in Pittsburgh, I thought. I know Tom Quinn, the special teams coordinator, was a little disappointed in the second half coverage units, but I thought the coverage units in the first half were really good. These things are going to be very, very important for this team. You know, it's not to be ignored, because if they improve the defense, but then the special teams falls apart, well, guess what? People are going to be disappointed.
Yeah, I don't think that special teams is going to fall apart, though. Special teams that fall apart is a kicker who can't make a kick. It's a punt returner that can't catch the ball.
Josh Brown, by the way, okay, let's be fair. His resume is very similar to Lawrence Tynes'. In fact, it's scary how close their resumes are. But Josh Brown has never had to deal with the Meadowlands Winds, really.
He played in Cincinnati. I mean, Cincinnati is not
a little bit, but just a little bit. He was only there for a cup of coffee. What's it like here in December and January?
Though it's not as windy in this building as it was in the old one.
No question. But it's still something that has to be considered.
No, that's true.
Chase Blackburn was the captain of the special teams unit for several years and the heart and soul of that unit. He's no longer here. I mean, Ryan Mundy's a very good special teams player. But, you know, who's the captain of special teams? They haven't voted for one yet. I'm curious to see, going into the season, how good this special teams unit's going to be. It's just something I'm keeping an eye on. All I'm saying is, yeah, if the defense improves, that's great. But just watch. You don't want to have any fall off in one of the other units, because that would be painful.
All right, Paul, I can't read Neely's handwriting here. Maybe you can help me out. I know this caller's out in California. We're going to bring him on the air. Give me a shot here on this name.
I think it might be Abe, A-B-E, and then just a little squiggly.
Oh, is it Abe?
Maybe.
Yep.
Abe, hey, what's going on, pal?
Good morning, John. Good morning, Paul.
Hi.
Hey, I was listening to the show the last couple of days, Paul, and you made mention about the importance of why or why not we need four preseason games. It got me thinking with the scuttlebutt of quite possibly going to 18 games based, I would think, the overall line is revenue. Would the CBA or the players union or the ownership get involved in maybe adding, say, from 53 on the roster to 58 to 60 players, where maybe certain players that are on the bubble might make the team?
I've heard 59.
I've been listening to you this. Okay, yeah. 59.
Yeah, that's what I've heard. I've heard the two things that would be discussed if they went to 18 games. Obviously, you're cutting down the preseason to two, and then I'm also hearing they would add a second bye week as part of the deal, and that the rosters would go up to 59 from 53. Those are the types of discussions that they'd be talking about.
Okay. Thank you. I appreciate your call and your comments.
Thank you.
All right, Abe. Well, you called us, and we appreciate you making that call.
Got to let your fingers do the walking.
You know, and to me, I think I know you are going to not necessarily disagree with this, but be have some chagrin. To me, it's inevitable. The NFL is going to go to 18 games eventually.
I'm a big fan of this game, as everybody knows, so I'd love to see 18 games of the regular season as a fan.
There's just too much money in it for both sides, I think.
But as a person who's as closely involved in the actual workings of the league as I am, I'm not so sure that I love that, because I see what these players go through. and it's pretty darn brutal.
Yeah.
And I also look at these training camps, which are watered down because of what the players go through, and I say to myself, well, if there were an 18-game schedule this year, the Giants would be playing their final preseason game Sunday in Indianapolis. And I sympathize when Tom Coughlin says to me, we haven't had enough practices, we haven't had enough hitting, we are clearly nowhere near where we have to be to start the regular season. And I'm going to tell you again, folks, today, if you weren't listening yesterday when Len called up, I would say I invite you to call on Monday morning after this Colts game. You tell me, after watching the Giants play the Steelers and the Colts, do you think the Giants would be ready to play opening day against the Dallas Cowboys 1 week from Sunday? My contention is they would not be.
201-939-4513. Jason's out in Montana. Jason, good morning. How are you, pal?
Good. Good morning. Hey, wanted to ask a question. Not too many people are talking about DeMontre Moore's injury. He's missed three practices. I think he's going to get today's day rest. You think he's going to be back?
He's got a bruised shoulder. It's a bruised shoulder, his left shoulder, and they've been icing it and wrapping it and giving him all kinds of treatments. But, you know, John, we've been watching him out there on the field looking at practice from the sidelines. He doesn't look like he's in any pain. And certainly when an injury is considered serious, they'll keep the guy in the trainer's room, and he'll be getting treatments all day and all night and all afternoon, and they won't even let him hang outside watching practice from the sidelines if they think that the situation warrants it.
I am surprised he's been out for so long, though. I thought he would bounce back quickly from this.
Well, I don't know if they're just being extra careful with him or not, but I think the fact that he is out on the field watching practice tells me it's not a real bad injury. I mean, otherwise, as I said, they'll treat it 24 hours around the clock. I mean, you should see some of the medical apparatuses they give these players with nowadays. Guys will walk into the cafeteria. Ahmad Bradshaw, and I'm not telling a secret out of school now because Ahmad Bradshaw is no longer here. Ahmad Bradshaw, very often,
air out that dirty laundry, Paul.
He would come in into the cafeteria sometimes for lunch. You know, guys would be out practicing, and Ahmad couldn't practice, and he'd have these boxes that he'd be carrying around with all kinds of wires and little lights and beeping sounds. And
that would be the electronic stimulation devices.
There you go. You know, and so they're taking care of these guys 24/7 if they believe the injury warrants it. And that's not what's happening right now with DeMontre Moore. So I give you some logical explanation as to why I don't think it's all that bad.
Yeah, well, that's good to hear. I guess the next one would be, you think Cooper Taylor's, I don't know. It's just that, I mean, what, he has a hamstring?
Yes.
I mean, it's probably going to come down to what, Taylor or Hill?
Cooper Taylor's going to be on this team. I'm just telling you, as a fifth-round pick, Cooper Taylor is going to be on this team.
You know, the only problem I'd have, John, is if this hamstring does not heal enough to get him any more preseason work, I hate to say it, but I think there's a possibility here just off of what I saw in Pittsburgh. And let me make this clear. I'm just saying this is a possibility. It's an option for the Giants. I'm not saying I favor it, but off of what I saw in Pittsburgh, Tyler Sash had a good night. I didn't have him making the 53 coming into training camp. In theory, it is possible, and we lost the caller.
We lost Jason there.
It is possible that if Taylor can't get back on the field because of a lingering hamstring injury, we've seen guys over the years, Aaron Wallace included in the past, who have to stay out of the lineup, it seems, months on end because of hamstrings. The Giants could, potentially, if Taylor can't get back on the field in the preseason, put him on injury reserve. They could keep Tyler Sash on the 53 as the extra safety, the fourth safety. And Will Hill serves his four-game regular season suspension. And then you're buying time for him. And then when Will Hill comes back in week five, maybe it becomes a Will Hill versus Tyler Sash decision. And, you know, again, Cooper Taylor might be out for the year on injured reserve. Look, they put Cruz on IR out for the year with a hamstring injury when he was a rookie. Remember that, John? It can happen.
Hey, look, I'm not taking anything away. They could. I get that.
It's just an option.
I know why he made a couple plays, and I'm not trying to, you know, downgrade it or whatever. But let's not make out Tyler Sash that he was LT in that game, that first preseason game either. The running back and the quarterback ran into each other in the end zone, and he fell down on top of them. The other play, Zach Diassi hits the guy after he loses it on his own, and the ball flies right to Tyler Sash. Let's not make it out that he was evading three guys and getting picks and sacking the quarterback here.
Again, I don't have Sash coming into camp making the 53. But he did help himself by being involved in some plays, being very active, and at least in the Pittsburgh game, you got to give him a plus grade. You have to give him a plus grade, regardless of what the circumstances were. He gets a plus grade. He's got three more games to prove that he deserves a big plus grade and deserves consideration for the 53. I mean, again, John, we just said a caller ago, why do you need the four preseason games? I think guys like him are guys that need the four preseason games because they've got to put together some semblance of work that deserves to be here.
Let's go to Christian down in Virginia. Christian, good morning.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Doing all right, Christian. What's up?
I was just calling to weigh in on the talk about the safety.
Okay.
I was thinking what you guys think with the new CBA and everything. Doesn't that really hurt a guy like a Cooper Taylor or anybody really fifth round and later undrafted free agents? Like, as if you're a coach, as a coaching staff, aren't you going to be less inclined to, I guess, roll a dice, so to speak, or develop a guy like that throughout the season with less practices? And aren't you going to be more inclined to keep a guy like Stash, whose ceiling is probably a lot more limited, but at least you know what you have with him? Do you think the new CBA was kind of set up for veteran players?
Well, Christian, keep in mind, though, too, while there's less practice time, and that does hurt a guy like Cooper Taylor, there's actually a lot more classroom time now than there might have been 3 years ago. These guys are studying it more. Now, whether or not they can translate that to the field with the limited amount of practice time they have is a different question, and one really that I have a difficult time answering because I just don't know how that works. I'm sure it's different for each guy and how they, you know, compute information and carry it over to the field. So I don't think the CBA
that's
what
has... I know the classroom time is accelerated, but the point I was making, I was like, in the case that you get dinged up and you're not available, the fact that there is less on the field, you know, physically doing the job, when you do miss a day or two and you are an unknown, you know, you're a small school guy, you're a fifth round guy, the CBA, I think, is set up to, instead of those guys getting jobs, and they were before this CBA, they were getting jobs, they were getting on the field, they were cheap labor. I think I'm looking at the CBA like it's meant to protect the veteran players.
There is no question. You are a very astute caller because I've had many conversations with very important people in this league who have no doubt said to me, the CBA and the way that the union fought for things in the CBA is clearly designed to enhance the situation for veterans. These are the guys who wanted fewer practices. These are the guys who wanted less hits during the course of the summer, because these are the guys who want to protect their bodies. They want to protect their big fat contracts. They want to be able to extend their careers another year or two because they want to make some money on the back end of the deal. That's what it's all about. And let's not forget, there's the 8-9 year pro who may have been in jeopardy of getting cut if that sixth round pick came in and made a splash in the training camp. Well, guess what?
Exactly. Yeah.
Now, if that kid can't show what he can do, well, that 8 or 9 year vet has a better chance of sticking around because the rookie wasn't able to explode onto the scene. You are more than 2,000% correct. This CBA is clearly geared towards everything that the veterans wanted to have, to save their skin and to improve their situation. You're very astute, caller. You're very astute.
I've got one more quick question for you guys, and it's regards to the D-line. I know that, you know, we're heavy on the D-line this year, whether it's interior or on the outside. We just have so many D-linemen, more than any other team in camp. And I know there's been a huge emphasis on the middle of the defense and the tackle spot, because we gave up 130 a game last year on the ground. My question is, I know pretty much we all can say that Kiwi, Moore, JPP, and Tuck are going to make the team. I think we know Linval, we know that Hankins, and we know that Jenkins are all going to make a team. But do you think that they view Jenkins as kind of a hybrid to play both spots? And do you think that they'll keep 9 total defensive linemen and 4 of each, like 4 tackles, 4 ends, and then plus Jenkins to be the swing guy, or do you think they'll keep closer to just eight and counting them strictly as a defensive tackle?
Honestly, in my opinion, I think they keep 10. I think that's where the Giants have the most talent.
Wow.
I think that's where the team has the most talent, and I think the last thing you want to do is let somebody go that's more talented than somebody at another position just for depth purposes. I believe
best football players.
Exactly. Even with Jenkins being able to play end in tackle, and I know Paul disagrees with me, I think the Giants will keep 10 people on the defensive line.
Well, I'm going to have a hard time with 10 because they want to keep the three quarterbacks. You may have to keep another defensive back, not knowing about Terrell Thomas' situation.
You keep 5 wide receivers instead of 6, and you keep 10 defensive
linemen. Well,
to me, that's the easy answer.
I'm looking at 5 receivers for sure. I'm not going to keep 6, and a lot of teams want to keep 6. That's where I'm taking one spot. The other thing is you don't know about your fullback. You know, you don't know about Henry Hanoski. I still think he's probably going to wind up on PUP. He says he's not. He says he's going to be ready for the Cowboys game. So that's also another tricky scenario. Every time you take a spot from one position, you got to steal one from another. And so that's where it gets tricky. But here's what I will say. Here's what I will say. John's right about Jenkins. I agree with that, and I agree with you, caller. Jenkins is clearly going to be a guy who's going to play both. I've been telling people I think the Giants will use 6 regular defensive ends in their rotation, Jenkins being one of those 6, even though he's primarily a tackle.
Right. The thing is about keeping the 10 defensive linemen, though, is which defensive linemen at the bottom of the, you know, besides the obvious ones we're going to keep, do you think can contribute on special teams? Because you know that's going to be a huge part of what they do. I know Tracy's always been a pretty good special teams player.
Yeah.
I know Ajomo has pretty much played against second, third stringers.
Ajomo's had such a rough camp, though.
And he's also never been a very good special teams player either, which is going to hurt him.
He's not making it, I don't think.
I think a guy like Justin Tratto, who does play well on special teams, has a much better shot at making this roster than a guy like Ajomo.
Yeah, that's a good point. He actually looked pretty decent, especially against the run the other night.
Yeah, if they go 10.
I'll take enough of your time.
Thank you.
Hey, appreciate the call, Christian.
If they go 10, John, and I don't know that they go 10, but if they go 10, Tratow is probably looking at that spot right now based on what we've seen to this point.
And we're assuming Kuhn's going to be on PUP?
Yeah, I think you have to. I mean, even though he's running around out there and looking pretty good in some of the agility drills with the trainers, nobody seems to be talking about him getting closer to practicing. How do you consider him?
I think he could be ready, but I think the Giants are still comfortable with the rest of their depth at the position. They'll be cautious with him, put him on PUP to start the season, and then let's go through the numbers right now.
Well, they can afford to put him on PUP is the point.
Exactly. That's my point, because they don't necessarily need him because of the rest of their depth. I think Sean Rogers has played himself onto the roster in training camp. We'll see what he does in the next 2 preseason games before we make a decision on
that. He's a big man, isn't he, John?
Oh, he's a large fella. You got Jenkins, Linval Joseph, Sean Rogers, and then the fourth tackle, who am I forgetting? Jonathan Hankins. Jonathan Hankins would be the fourth guy. So those are the 4 tackles. And then at the end, you're obviously going to have Kiwi. You're going to have Tuck. You're going to have Adrian Tracy. You're going to have Demontre Moore. You're going to have – I'm forgetting one guy.
JPP.
JPP, obviously.
Which
thank you.
Also is a PUP candidate.
Maybe. I think he's less likely to be PUP than
Marcus Kuhn.
Yes, correct. The 10th guy, I think, in my opinion right now, and this is my sleeper in camp, I think Tratto is going to make the team as the 10th guy. I think he's next up. But then again, if Ajomo blows up and has 2 monster preseason games again, it's going to be hard to let him go.
Yeah, look what he did last year in the preseason. Preseason's weeks 3 and 4. Yeah. He really solidified his roster spot, even though he had never been a great practice player. He's one of those guys who just seems to do well in games, but again, he's playing against third stringers, too.
In fact, I would like the team to get him out there, and even if it's not until the 4th preseason game, I want to see him, the Patriots aren't going to play anybody. I like to see him either the 2nd or 3rd preseason game get some snaps against some 1s, and maybe not even 1s, at least get some snaps against some 2s.
The thing about Ajomo is he's a real curiosity, John. I mean, you look at him, 6'4", 270, comes from a good program with the Miami Hurricanes. He's the kind of guy who really intrigues you, and when he does what he does in Pittsburgh the other night, you say to yourself, well, gee, isn't there a way that somehow he can make it? But then when you and I watch practice every day and he seems rather invisible, you understand why he may have a very difficult time making the roster. The other thing I wanted to say to you, though, in terms of the defensive linemen, is that, you know, those guys and the linebackers, probably have the hardest time making an impression in the newfangled CBA training camp.
Yeah, you can't hit.
Anybody else.
Can't hit.
And so the preseason games take on an extra importance. And maybe, just maybe, as you say, if a Jomo has a couple of really good preseason games still in him, he might be able to try to steal his way back onto the team again.
No question about it. All right, let's go to Twitter here. Some questions, and this is on the defensive tackles from Jazzy J-Dog. I felt at the start of the season Marvin Austin would not make the 53. How's he done in camp? How'd he do in the first preseason game, and what are his chances now? I think he's still on the outside looking in. To me, he's a guy that has to show me something big in these next two games if he wants to make this team. And I mean a couple of sacks, tackles for loss, things like that.
Yeah, I think Austin, Patterson, and Okum are the three defensive tackles that are kind of at the bottom of the depth chart right now, at least for me. And they got a long way to go if they're going to try to break into that top five.
No question about it. Let's see some stuff from today. Tom Bartsch. Concern pre-draft on Moore was slacking at between games after a great game at Pittsburgh. Worries about resting on laurels and that. Another guy wrote in, asked whether or not he's putting on a lot of muscle. I know that's one of the things the Giants wanted to do is get his weight up.
Yeah, I mean, I think with any of these guys that we're talking about, you really have to say give them the full preseason before you make a decision. Because I don't think any of the fellas we're talking about here, John, are going to be in the first cut. You know, that first cut is usually a bunch of fellas who are at the back end of the roster anyway and have no chance at all. I think the guys we're talking about stick around till that final cut, which means they will have the four full preseason games to either prove they belong or don't. And I think that's the best answer you can give anybody right now. Again, that's another argument for four preseason games.
One of our loyal listeners out in California, that's Al, or at least on the West Coast. Not sure if she's in California or not. Myrtle, James, Jomo, Tracy, all potential late slots. Who should we look at carefully on special teams the next 2 weeks from guys trying to make this team?
Let's go over the names once again, one at a time.
Well, she listed four, and she listed, let's see, what do we got here?
Was that Allie from California?
Yes, exactly.
I didn't know she woke up that early.
Junior Myrtle, James, Jomo, Tracy. Those are the four names she mentioned, but she said who else should we be looking at besides those four?
Well, you know, McBride has really made a big push here at the middle part of training camp to try to sneak onto this team.
And he can be a gunner. He's been a gunner, too, I think, on specials.
He really has, John.
And let's not forget Michael Cox, who's not only a gunner, also doing returns.
Well, you know, we're not even putting Cox right now on the bubble. I'm kind of having him on the 53.
He's still on the bubble today. He's not on yet. He's getting there, but he's not on yet.
He's grasping at the spot. Let's put it that way.
He's one fumble away from not being on the
53. Yeah, I know.
And if you're one fumble away, you're still on the bubble. That's the way I look at it.
That's true. But anyway, there's no question that Cox is a guy who they want to make part of the 53. They're giving him every opportunity to this point. He seems to be earning it. But I do think that McBride is a very interesting case. Here's what I was told about him. I did a little research on Mr. McBride. And the Bears like their corners to be bigger and more physical than what McBride is.
Well, they play that cover, too. They need him to run support,
correct,
do stuff at the line of scrimmage, all that stuff.
And the Giants are a little bit more willing to go with the smaller corner, if you will, because they ask them to do different things. They don't ask them to do as much of the cover two run support. They don't ask them to be as big a hitters, perhaps, as some other teams do, because they want you to be around the ball to break up the ball.
They want speed.
Okay, the Giants are more involved in that. So I was told that they think that McBride just didn't do much in Chicago because he didn't fit so much their scheme, their system, and what they were looking for, and that this kid does, and I say kid, he's a six-year pro, he does have some ability and does have some talent, and they think they can work with him, and actually, they're pretty pleased with what they've seen. Again, this is a guy who's going to need a few more games to see if he can make the 53, but so far, John, I'm going to tell you, he's a guy you have to put on your radar, and you have to make sure he's in the sights of your binoculars over the final three preseason games.
Kunal Kulkami was very impressed with the David Deal, Sean Locklear pairing last year in those jumbo running packages. Who do you think is going to be the guys in that package this season?
Pew
and Deal. I agree.
Yeah.
I'm with you. Saraceno, who are the Giants cutting a D-tackle DN? It's going to be difficult to get that 53 down. We already touched on those two positions. I'll skip over that. Let's see. Mike Farmer points out Giants always keep their draft picks for at least 1 year no matter what. Admitting a failure is to cut the pick. But if you remember, I forget what year it was. What was the year they had Stoney Woodson and DeAndre Wright in the seventh round? They cut both guys.
I can't remember the year offhand.
07? 08?
I want to say 7. No, it can't be 7 because 7 was the Super Bowl season. They kept everybody.
It must have been 08.
Had to be 08. Had to be 08. And, you know, honestly, I think any GM worth his grain of salt will tell you that whenever they draft a guy, they expect him at the very least to be able to compete to make the 53, but there is no shame in cutting a guy who was a 6th or 7th round pick.
Correct.
Your top 5, you really want them to be able to stick somehow, some way. After that, it's a bit of a crapshoot.
And in the same way, and I'm going to bring that back to one of our Twitter questions here, Cooper Taylor is not going to be able to get snuck onto the practice squad. He will get claimed by somebody. That's not going to happen, in my opinion.
The only way that Cooper Taylor gets claimed or doesn't get claimed is if there are pro teams who still shy away from him because of the heart condition. Let's face it, John, he did drop to the 5th round. So there was a reason for that. The small level of competition he was at, there was the heart condition that people were worried about. So those are things that may still scare some teams away. And then if this hamstring does not allow him to play during the preseason, there may also be some teams who say, hey, you know what, the guy wasn't even able to work during the course of the summer. Ah, forget about it. We don't want to touch him. There's a small chance he gets through, but I tend to agree with you that they're not going to be able to sneak him past.
And I want to go back to defensive tackles for a second. There's one guy we didn't mention, this from Saraceno. How about Mike Patterson? And this is why I think they're keeping 10 defensive linemen. Mike Patterson's a good player. He's been in the league a while. He was effective for the Eagles. There's a lot of talent on the defensive line ball. This is why I think they're going to have to keep 10. There are just too many bodies that can be effective.
Patterson's proven he can play in this league, too, and actually had some very good games against the Giants stuffing the run, which is ironic, isn't it? Because that's what they needed when they signed him.
To me, if Marvin Austin had a guy he should pattern his game after, him and Mike Patterson, him and Austin are very similar in terms of body type. That's the type of player Austin should try to be.
Agreed. And the funny thing is, as we look at the 8 defensive tackles right now, Austin and Patterson and Okum are your bottom 3, at least on my list.
And let me say this, by the way. I think Frank Okum has played extremely well in this training camp. And if it wasn't for the amazing depth at the position, I think he could make this team. He's gigantic. He can stop the run. He's been in the league for a while. Okum's a good player. And if it wasn't for the rest of the depth here, I would have no problem with Okum being on this team as a plugger. I really wouldn't. That guy can play. He goes one-on-one against these guards and centers. He moves them into the backfield every single time.
It's pretty funny because he and Rodgers, if you don't look at their faces, you see them from the side or from the back, it's easy to confuse them.
And they both look small next to Jasper. I mean, Jasper is just huge.
Michael Jasper,
yes. 370, is that what he's listed at these 6'4", days?
6'4", 375 out of Bethel.
And he used to be 4. He used to be 4 Bills. And then next time you're in practice, take a look at Jasper.
Oh, I have, and it's not
look
a pretty sight.
At the size of that man's calf muscles. They're literally bowling balls. They're the size of my fairly substantial head. I'm telling you, take a look. They're huge.
Oh, man.
I mean, it makes sense. You have that big calf muscles to carry around a 400-pound frame. I understand it. But, Paul, I'm telling you, take a glance next time you're at practice. They are the size of basketballs.
I have nothing to say.
Come on.
He's huge.
He's a big fella. He's really the nicest guy in the world. He's one of those gentle giants where you think he's going to be like this, you know,
yeah.
Jasper, I'm a big 400-pound guy. He is the nicest guy I ever talked to.
When I look at him, I'm thinking WWE, okay? I'm thinking this man needs to find a job at a pro wrestling. That's what I'm thinking.
He's a large fella, man.
He truly, truly is. And I say that with all due respect.
And I want to go to our guy, NYG Cap Central. He thinks Jarrell Scott is toast. Your thoughts?
Well,
he better do something the next 2 games if he wants to make it. I'll put it that way.
He's climbing a very tall mountain, John, and with what Michael Cox has shown during the course of the summer and then the other night in Pittsburgh, you have to believe Cox has the edge right now in that race at the quarter pole.
And our man Shy E at G-Men points out that Woodson and DeAndre was the 2009 draft.
2009?
Yeah.
Okay, well, he was looking that up, and that's
I'm
going to
take his word for it. I thought it was 2000.
Here's the bottom line. you know, again, when you get down into the sixth and seventh round, you're really kind of rolling the dice. And there's no shame if you miss a guy in his rookie season and he doesn't make it. Just the way it is.
BK 1979 at WB Hernandez 79. How's the competition for the last wide receiver spot shaking up? We haven't talked a whole lot about this. We know who the top four guys are going to be. I don't think there's any question there. When you get to that fifth spot, and, you know, Kevin Gilbride Jr. was actually pretty positive about the progress Gerald Jernigan had been making in camp. But bam, hamstring. Again, he's sitting down. He's probably not going to play this weekend. And, boy, he is just – every opportunity he's had to make this team over the past two or three years, I know it's a strong word, but I'll use it anyway, he's really squandered them.
Yeah.
Whether it's returning kicks and not being able to catch it. This year, chance to be the fifth wide receiver, actually be active on game day. He's there. He missed part of minicamp. He's missing training camp now. He's not going to play in the second preseason game. Brandon Collins has a suspension. Are we looking at a return of Ramsey's Barden right now? Or is a guy like Kevin Hardy, who's actually had a decent camp, is he going to be able to make a move and maybe be that fifth wide receiver?
John, every time I try to find Jarrell Jernigan's production as a Giant, I break out a magnifying glass and I still can't find it.
I thought maybe like one of those radar detectors.
It's really difficult.
It's hard. He hasn't done a whole lot.
And
preseason or regular season, for that matter.
I appreciate the fact that everybody who saw him at Troy said he was truly electric and explosive beyond belief. I understand why he was drafted based on all of the reports that I've read and heard about. But you know what? I haven't seen a shred of that here in the NFL. And it makes it very hard for me to want him on this 53. I believe Ramsey's Barden has by far been the fifth best receiver in training camp.
I happen to agree with you.
Having said that.
You can't teach hype, Paul.
No, you can't. But having said that, there are still holes in Ramsey's Barden's game.
Correct.
He does not get separation against tight press coverage and getting chucked off the line of scrimmage. He also does not fight for the ball when it's in the air very well. What Ramsey's Barden has done well is he has done very well catching the ball in open spaces. Mm-hmm. He's actually shown improvement in his hands. I think he's dropped one pass all camp.
Excellent hands.
Okay. And the other thing that he does do very well when he has an opportunity to, and he doesn't always much because they run him a lot with the third team, but when he has an opportunity to actually reach for a ball, again, if he doesn't think he's going to get hit, he does it. But, he's not a complete receiver. He's a partial receiver.
Then again, your fifth receiver rarely is complete. So there you go. Paul, you'll back with Anita tomorrow morning, correct?
Yes, sir.
All right. Paul will be here. Anita will be here. And have fun. Big Blue Kickoff Live tomorrow at 9:30.
Who we got on tonight on MSG Plus?
Tonight, it'll be Paul Dottino will be joining us as Paul plugs himself.
That's cool.
Roman Obin and Mike Crispino will be the guest.
Guess-wise.
We'll hear from offensive coordinator Kevin Gilbride, defensive coordinator Perry Fuel as
well. Oh, nice.
So it'll be a good show. It'll be a lot of fun. And you also see some exclusive behind-the-scenes footage from the Giants' team bonding bowling night that we're going to air as well. So you can check that out.
Steve Weatherford had a 187, which was the high game of the official competition. They had a warm-up game. And Andre Brown had a 207 in warm-ups. Check it out. Then they have an official game. And
how do you know about this?
Because
are you there?
I'm a reporter. I check on it.
Oh, my God.
So Brown shoots a 207 in warm-ups. And then they have an official game. And Weatherford gets a 187 for the high game. Okay? But check it out. Andre Brown, I was told he, like, totally fell off the map in the official game.
He choked?
Like a 107. Like totally choked when the lights came on.
I imagine you're not much of a bowler. It's not in the sun. It's in the dark. You don't like that.
Do you know? Do you know?
I'm going to regret asking this question, I feel like, right now.
During my teenage years, yes, I was a bowler. I averaged 165.
Really?
Yeah.
So other people out, you know, hanging out, going out to the
movies. I played a lot of street hockey. I played a lot of wiffle ball. Played a lot of pickup basketball. Did all those things, but I also bowled. You know, I'm a Jersey Soprano. You got to bowl if you're a Jersey Soprano.
How are you a Jersey Soprano?
Paisan, baby.
What makes you a Jersey? So every Italian that grew up in Jersey is a Jersey Soprano. That's what you're telling me.
Most of us are. Some of us who came from the wrong side of the country and are as white as a Kleenex tissue, I don't know that they qualify.
I can imagine. I'm just picturing you in my head as a teenager going to the bowling alley. Who'd you bowl with?
Other compatriots.
Other compatriots.
Yeah.
Okay.
Bowling can be fun, John.
I have no problem with bowling. I'm not a very good bowler.
I heard
bowler.
Tom Coughlin was pretty good too, by the way.
He was fine from what I understand.
Yes.
Oh boy. I can go so many ways with this that would make you upset, and I'm just not gonna do it. I don't have the time. I have work I gotta do.
It's best that we end the show, John.
I could sit here for 10 minutes and just get on you in the worst possible way, but I'm not gonna do it. I'm for once in my life I'm gonna take the high road. It's a rare occasion, Paul. You should enjoy it.
Folks, it's so nice to be loved.
All right. Everybody, we'll see you tomorrow on Giants.com at 9:30. Big Blue Kickoff Live. Make sure you check it out. We'll see you then.